Hey there, we're Mighty Coconut, and welcome to Walkabout Talkabouts, a series of creative discussions between film and gaming luminaries. Let's tune in as they play a round of our studio's VR game, Walkabout Mini Golf. Thanks for listening.
Hi there, everybody. I am Lucas Martel with Walkabout Mini Golf, and we're here today with James Thomas from Rare. Who's going to talk to us a little bit about video game development and himself and yeah, Rare and what you guys are up to. So we're going to go ahead and kind of introduce ourselves as we take our first putt. So I think, Chase, you're up first if you want to take the lead.
So I'm Chase Shields, lead tech artist over here at Mighty Coconut. I do a lot of things, a lot of hats. Really kind of mainly make sure that these courses sing as much as they possibly can and perform. But yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing more about back ends of CFEs as well.
Awesome. Cool. Go ahead. Cool. Impress us with your golfing abilities. Chase is actually a real life golfer, so we need to actually go out on the real course at one point.
Nope.
He got there. Cool. Well, I think I'm up next. Like I mentioned, I'm Lucas Martel. I'm the creator of Walkabout. And I do a little bit of everything. It was a solo project, and now we're, 34 courses in, I think? I think I'm right next to you. I used to be better at this game. I hope you beat us. That'd be awesome. Go for it, James.
Grant. Hi, I'm James Thomas, and I'm an associate tech director at Rare, which basically means I started as a programmer, worked my way up, and now more in management. They have taken away my Visual Studio and coding. But it's still good. Get to look after teams and see through Sea of Thieves. So, right.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm absolutely going to pick your brain a little bit about that transition, because I'm also in that boat where they've kind of taken most of the code away from me too, and I miss it. And now I'm in meetings all for good reason. Yes, yeah, but we'll get to that later. I'd love to find out a little bit more, James, about just sort of what's your background in, kind of how you got your start in the games industry.
So I started programming quite late. Like, I've been at Rare 23 years, so probably slightly more of the old hands there, which means that when I started, there was a lot of just core programming, not very many supporting GUIs to go with it. Mm-hmm. So I started with QBasic on the Windows 3.11, where there was a game where gorillas would throw bananas at each other, much like Worms. And so my first experience was basically tinkering with that, just trying to break it open. And after that, I really liked the puzzle aspects of it, not really knowing what was happening. And so signed up to some courses at college, did it at uni. And at the time, it was weird. There was about 100 programmers, engineers on our course at uni, but only about 3 of us wanted to actually do video games, which I found wild. Applied straight from university and got really lucky that Rare were interested in my CV, got me in for an interview, and got through the door that way.
Awesome.
It's the one of the hiring folks said that one of the things that helped was I did A-level art as well. So there's a creative side on that now, although I wouldn't pick up a pencil or a brush nowadays. Our concept artists are far, far too good. But I think it was that just helped separate me out from the C++ crowd at that point.
Awesome. But you had an eye, in other words. And you could sort of tell when something was right or wrong and sort of whether you could totally fix it or not, you could at least sort of call it out and sort of have a vibe for when it was working. That's a great skill to have. Cool. Yeah. So when you joined Rare, then what was your, were you basically just sort of oh, this is not my turn. You beat us, James. Yep. You get to take the honors. So what was your role when you first started? Was it basically just coding?
Yes. Yeah. So when I first started, a small stint in R&D, which was our core engine team at the time. And then my first game was Grabbed by the Ghoulies back on the original Xbox. And it was really exciting for me because that team were the Banjo team that had rolled straight off the N64 games and straight onto the original Xbox. I was a little starstruck to begin with when the voice of Kazooie turned out to be my manager.
Cool. Maybe you could talk a little bit about sort of Rare and sort of like, yeah, where you started, but also sort of like even before, because you guys are getting ready to celebrate your 40th anniversary, I believe.
Yes. Yes. 40 years old this year. And it's been really good because 10 years ago I got to do Rare Replay, which was a celebration of our first 30 years. Unlike it. And just being involved in that, because I was quite a Rare fan before I signed up. And so just being able to go through all the history and elements there, we looked through everything that we'd done on the Spectrum, the BBC, through to the Nintendo consoles, and it was just a wonderful little trip down memory lane. But yeah, Rare have been around a while and probably done as many platforms as some folks who got hot dinners, so.
Yeah. I'm actually curious to know a little bit about sort of like updating and like the Replay specifically of sort of bringing some of those older games sort of like back to life. Was there a big sort of like remaster as well of that, or was it the sort of like how involved was making the Replay?
It was, because of the number of platforms that we handled, it was horses for courses, so different things we did, different elements. So when we did the Spectrum build, there was actually a Microsoft engineer who worked in one of their security areas, like security and bugs, and he wrote a Spectrum emulator in his lunchtime and had put it on Windows Phone to date that completely. And he got in touch with us going like, can I put this on the store? And we're like, well, you know, it's we're not gonna, as long as it's not for profit, you know, you're not gonna retire off this, that's fine, do it as a tech project. And then his name came back up as we were looking for how we could do things. So we brought in him. When we did the 360 games, that was when Microsoft were rolling out the backwards compatibility. So we got to leverage that. And then everything else was a in-house emulator building, basically, which was great. Oh, and we got Code Mystics, who are based up in Canada, to do some of the N64 work as well, which is great, because they've come back to us since with working on GoldenEye. But there was just a barn full of nerds geeking out over different bits, whether it was decompiling old ROMs to try and put in cheats and look at what the developers had done like 20, 30 years ago, or folks just playing their childhood games. It was a proper passion project, that.
That sounds like a lot of fun, and just that ability, because there's so many different small games tied together, I'd imagine that's a lot of fun, too. Just like, usually with big projects, you don't quite get to, you know, there's so much more organization, but I would imagine with something like that, where you have so many older, smaller games, that it's a lot easier to just like, it's all green pasture. You could just get in and sort of like start messing with stuff and figuring it out. And there's maybe a little less just like the production management, I would imagine.
It was, to be honest, it was a bit of a whirlwind as well. It was 9 months, 10 months from start to finish. Because we'd come off the back of Kinect Sports Rivals, which was a launch window game for the Xbox One. And then it's almost like, well, you know, we've got the 30th coming up. And like, can we do this? Could we do this? Which really added to the energy of the game as a whole, because it was a proper small team working together, passion project. And it just made it so memorable in that sense.
Awesome. Well, I'd love to find out a little bit more about what you've been working on now and more recently. You want to talk about, kind of what you're up to currently?
Yeah. Ever since Rare Replay, I've been working on Sea of Thieves, which is an online pirate adventure where you get to crew up with your friends and sail a ship around the seas, finding treasure, fighting skeletons, fighting other crews. It's been out for 7 years now, which has been very pleasing, because this is Rare's first foray into service evolving games at this point. So just seeing how the community, the fan base have reacted to it and wanted us to keep going has been really, really heartening, because up until now, we've basically done one and done. Like, everything's been a cartridge, everything's been a disc and gone, and maybe a DLC, but we move on with life. This has really changed so many processes within Rare, like from design to shipping to like every single department has had to adjust to this new way.
That's like us.
I know we could. I was going to say we could probably really relate.
Yeah,
yeah, because I mean, because a lot of the decisions you have to make, even creative calls, you have to consider like, okay, we have a scheduled timeline of like, can we fit it within this, or can we like shift around releases and kind of keep that in mind? But at the same time, try to delight players as much as you can, because, you know, you want to keep it going as long as possible.
That's it. Yeah, we've had the same thing. We're like, can we fit this giant feature in, or do we have to piecemeal it? Like, here's step one, here's step two, and build it. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Completely get that, yeah.
So was Sea of Thieves originally intended to be a live ops game, or and by the way, for folks listening who don't know, live ops is an industry term. It basically means like all the stuff that happens after release. So Walkabout has very much turned into a live ops or a live service game where we're just sort of like, yeah, continuously releasing new stuff. I know you mentioned that I think you're on season 16 right now.
Yes. Yeah, we've got a new season coming out probably after we record this, but before it launches. And it follows a lot of the philosophy that we've tried to put into the rest of the game. It's evolving what we've got. It's pushing what we've got in the sandbox forward, because right back at the start, one of the principles that design wanted to follow was players telling stories together. And so it was always intended to be a game that was multiplayer, that was out there so that friends could crew up and have a wild time together. We didn't want to necessarily prescribe what they were up to, though, because we've done the new games in the past and it's fine, but there's only a path through it. Maybe the corridor's wide, but it's still just one path through it.
Yeah.
So with Sea of Thieves, we wanted to give them this playground, this sandpit they could just explore and make their own fun in. And so the term tools, not rules, came up. So everything we've tried to put in the game that is something the players can use or hold is something that we hope they can use in unexpected ways that will surprise and delight us. So elements that we've got, cannons that you can fire yourself out of, which just creates hilarity when it's like you're trying to board a ship from miles away. We've got disguises that you can dress yourself up as a barrel and try and hide on other people's ships. There's just a host of little things like that where we put it in and then try and give them as many options as possible rather than like narrow down what they can do with it.
That's super cool. I'm curious, because I've played but very, very little. Unfortunately, I haven't had time to like really, really deep dive in an open world game like that. I would imagine the playtime is probably in the hundreds of hours range for a lot of people that are playing it.
I will say, yeah.
I'm curious how you deal with balance, especially in an ever-evolving game like that, when you're building in new abilities. That's something that we really haven't had to deal with as much, because we're adding new levels, but we're not fundamentally changing the mechanics of an existing course necessarily.
It's a fine balance, as you would expect. We have a couple of things that go for us in that, where it's there's not a power leveling for us, although you can like level up in the game to see new things, to buy new accessories and clothing. You don't get better weapons or better like tools to use out in the world. So it's a very level playing field, which is great, because I played for like 2.5 years before my cousin then bought the game and wanted to play with us. And it meant that it was just a level skill playing field then. So all he had to do was learn the tips and tricks. And he was as good as the rest of us. And we find that is so good when it comes to encouraging social play as well, because often like you will find yourself. In fact, this is how I got into Walkabout. It's word of mouth. And so removing the barrier of, no, I'm sorry, you've got to grind for 20 levels before you can get to the same point in the world as me. It just means that people can just drop in, drop out as they see fit.
Yeah, totally. Well, I want to ask one more very selfish question about sort of like, so you said that it sounds like it was pretty much designed from the beginning then to be an ongoing, ever-expanding game. You mentioned sort of like some of those processes, and just again, being this also being our first live service game and our first big game to begin with, I'm kind of curious what some of those processes were that you mentioned that changed a lot as you're doing this. I'll go ahead and fly on to the next hole as well, so we can
Very infrastructural level. It's trying to figure out how to put out as patches like there's no tomorrow, because I think, including our test servers, we put out near 1,000 patches in the 10 years. Like it's a stupidly high number. And so just building the pipeline, building the infrastructure to be able to support that is one thing. But then when it comes down to the actual I feel I was in the way for that. I feel it hit my neck.
That was all your fault.
Absolutely. You kicked it.
I feel like I got cheated out of my last one, so I'm going to have a talk with whoever designed this one.
Hello.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, so just the keeping up with the release and sort of like, yeah, all of the sort of like that ongoing publishing release, ongoing QA, the sort of like, yeah, you kind of, it's kind of a never ending cycle, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the big thing we implemented very early on, again, like I'm very engineer focused, so that would be most of my answers, but we really put a focus on automated testing. Because with a game so big that it's forever expanding, forever growing, we need to make sure that everything we put in doesn't necessarily break what went before it. And so the suite of tests that always runs, we've got hundreds of thousands that basically run on the servers. Mm-hmm. And it gives us a safe peace of mind that like the game can be as stable as it can be.
Yeah.
From a design point of view as well, it's the iteration loops, it's fair to say, have got tighter. Like, because our seasons are... Oops, sorry, I teleported. The seasons, although they're like 3 months long, and they obviously take longer to design and work up before that, but it's a very different setup from before when you had like, here's a few years. Like, go and see what you can make. And so there's a certain element of prototyping in what we'd call mainline. So everything... If you're trying stuff, you're doing it where other people are trying to work and ship the game. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be a bit careful about how you practice, make, try things.
Mm-hmm. Right. You'd fix the bugs as they pop up because everyone is on mainline, you know, watching.
Yes.
Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah, in a way, we've kind of like just the way that we've designed this course or just designed this game to have just basically courses, they're kind of compartmentalized in their way so that it kind of is a little bit easier for us to kind of not break, you know, legacy courses unless we're changing them as well. So as we go, so that's been helpful to keep, you know, bugs to a minimum, but still stuff pops up because there's still physics involved that affects every course as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're also doing a lot of other core improvements to the game as well, adding new features, adding more different modes and different things like that. So that's the thing more recently that has been sort of like that. Yeah, we've definitely been running into more of that. But I'm also kind of curious, how big is the team currently on Sea of Thieves?
Oof. That's a great question. We sort of span quite a fair amount of Rare, because there's a second game in there, Everworld. But there we also use quite a few co-devs, so we're buddying up with some code outsource. We co-dev with Flix and Lucid, who are both UK-based. And so that really helps us expand into what we need. And we sometimes have to disappoint them as well, because for a nerdy comment, we're using a version of Unreal which is 4.10, which is about 8 years old. And so it's very hard to get updates for the project at this point. So we get these grads straight out of uni, and we have to say, you've got to go through a time machine and work with an engine that's probably before they started university.
Oh, that's super interesting, because one of the things that we have been, it's a blessing and a curse, but because we're working on in VR, there are so many, like, we have to upgrade, we're on Unity, but we have to upgrade the Unity, like, almost every 6 months. And so we're pretty close to current on that. It's a pain every single time we do it, but we have to, because so many of the features that are coming out that are required to continue to make the game in VR are only available in new versions. So that's definitely been a pain point. But on the flip side, we also are not dealing with sort of like the engine that it originally shipped with. So I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse.
I think it's a good thing too, because it's because we're live ops, we're kind of staying ahead of the curve. Like if Meta comes out with an update or Unity comes out with an update that affects VR, then we're always finding those bugs like right away and hopefully trying to like course correct and adjust as we go.
I would say the flip side of that though is often that we're on the bleeding edge of that, which means that we bleed a lot, because the number of things that might be broken that might not be our fault is significant, but we're not going to go into all of that.
It's definitely one we've taken on, go like next time we will stay up to date. But the flip side is it means we've customized a lot of the engine to do what we need it to. So pros and cons there.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, go ahead.
You mentioned Unity. One of the great things of the early days of Sea of Thieves was the Unity prototype that we had. Because whilst we're having to, you know, make new features in mainline as it stands, the early version of Sea of Thieves was this complete standalone project. We're not going to port the code forward. It's going to be this unique thing that we can practice in as much as we want. But we also kept it very stylized. And I'll be honest, it wasn't a million miles away from like the low poly approach. Because we were going with the, if it's fun when you're just a capsule, like all the players were just giant pills, just capsules. If it's fun with that, then it's going to be fun when we spend the time and effort putting animations in, putting the models in, putting the pretty islands in. So it was a great philosophy that the design team operated early doors with that.
It's really cool because it's almost like a traditional way that Nintendo really kind of excels in that kind of idea. But it's a very, really much like a classic kind of game design workflow. It's like focusing on the fun and then getting that working before you even fill out all the art.
I love the art. Well, same person, Viva Pinata was one of my favorite games. And the same art director who was on that is on Sea of Thieves, and he just created this lovely aesthetic that's like quite painterly, everything's a bit wonky.
I love the look of it, and that organic quality really adds a lot of character that you can, it's hard to do that in CG, in models.
Again, they're wizards over there. There's certain barns that I just consider magic users.
It's funny because I kind of equate the visual style kind of like what we're doing in a way. Like there's certain things in Sea of Thieves that are very, very realistic, like the water, you know, very much like realistic water, but then stylized characters, where it's kind of similar, where we pick and choose what we want to be more realistic in the effects side. And then obviously it's still low poly and very stylized in the overall aesthetic.
The water was obviously a big part for when you got ships sailing around. And the tech guys who created that, they were reading white papers and all sorts of that. The first time I was in the middle of a storm with the waves, you know, like twice as high as they usually are, the lightning going around you and the light bouncing off of the crest of the waves. It was just like, okay, we've got something here, which is good to feel.
Yeah. So I actually have kind of another selfish question, which is, I'm curious. With you said your seasons are 3 months long, how far ahead are you scheduled? Like, how much do you know? Like, oh, here is something, or here are all the things that's going to drop in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. Just kind of how many different things are you working on the same time?
I'm going to say multiple and leave it vague. It's a constant ask, because we've got multiple teams that do the seasons, that do features, that do game health. And so there's a certain amount of plate spinning and divvying up about which teams can do which. It's always one of the philosophies I really enjoy is when we build on something that we've got, partly to reduce the tech risk. You know, if we build something brand new, it's always a bit scary. But we've got so much in the game already. Like, there's so much that we could make sing and just build upon from that. So I always feel confident when we get those ones going, yes, there's something there. Let's push that on.
Yeah, we do a lot with we call it walk, jog, run. We're basically like, what is the, we have some grand idea, like, but what is maybe the walk version of that idea that we could put together and get it into a course that's maybe 3 to 6 months down the road? And then we know like, oh yes, we would love to add that, but let's see how that part of it goes first. And then see if we're able to walk without falling down, then what can we do with the jog version? Then maybe, I do think there's a couple of features like that where you now are starting to get to that run version of that we wanted to do way back in the day with, like, I think in this course animations were definitely one of the things that we avoided for a really long time, and now we're starting to get a lot of tools built up to have more of those animations running in real time in VR, which is actually a surprisingly big challenge.
Us, it goes narrative as well, because like for season 16 that's coming out, Big Bad, which is the Skeleton Lord Flameheart, has reappeared, and it's good for every season. Like, we push the narrative, not just the sandbox, and try and push the narrative on. And it's got one of my favorite features for a while now, where you can summon his skeleton minions to help you. It's something that we've been looking at for a while. How can we get more from the world itself? But if we can now convert the entities that you were trying to just shoot and smash with swords, but now they can help you. You can pick up chests. They can go digging for you. They can go and fight other crews for you. It means there's just another layer of life in the world. And also really good, like, say, if you're a solo slooper or like two players in a small ship, someone to basically give you a hand on it. And I just love that element of building on what we've got there.
Right. And like you said, you keep the core gameplay mechanics, like the combat and everything is the same. Like, I first played it years ago, and then I just picked it up recently again to kind of get refreshed, and it plays exactly the same. It's like mini golf. Mini golf is not going to change. Your putter is not going to, you know, change much. So you kind of keep that kind of middle ground so players can like put it away, but then come back and be delighted over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So I have another, maybe kind of more on the technical side of things question. I'm curious how often you end up, you realize that you kind of have to fundamentally rewrite portions of the game, or that there was a tool like doing something like that where you're now able to take enemies and turn them into allies. I'm curious, like, how much of that ends up being completely like rewriting what we would consider to be core systems of the game, or is that something that in your brilliant foresight, you just did it perfect the first time?
There's a big post-it note on my desk saying, think about long-term future. And I feel like that and the code base just goes one in one. Because, you know, like, the team changes, the teams evolve, the teams swap studios. And so having continuity throughout is hard, but we feel like we've got a culture, a like team dynamic that allows us to put that philosophy over. And so it's really good to see how co-devs, how new starters, how apprentices, how graduates can all just come into that and know how they should work with the game, be it like code reviews, be it like unit tests. There's a think about the long-term future of all this. And when it comes to features itself, it's usually what is the cost of this? How long is it going to take? Like, what is the risk of this? So on a very boring level, it is a scoping analysis of whether it's worth it. But there are so many things that we've leveraged, which have been great, which, like, we had the emote system, which, you know, most games have, and you can, you know, pick an emote from your menu and you can do that to your friends. We've built the hiding system and the disguise system on the top of that, so you can wander around as barrels and things. So there's canny use of existing systems with that.
We do a ton of that too. Like, how much can we reuse to be able to save time and then use that time towards the newer ideas that we really want to, like, cook, you know? So we're really trying to focus as much as possible.
One of the big things that I've talked a little bit about, so I won't go too deep into it, but because this was originally a solo project, and, you know, I was an animator, not really a game designer, like, I had coded a lot of stuff up. Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I meant to do. I had basically the whole engine was pretty much spaghetti code. And it was all just sort of like really brutally put together. And luckily, the tech team led by Colby Morgan has really done a great job of sort of reworking all that and putting it into more modular systems. And at this point, we've pretty much rewritten the core of the game. But I'm actually kind of curious, because you said that it's been 7 years. How long have you been on Sea of Thieves? Because you would have started 10 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, 9-10 years on Sea of Thieves. Okay. And it started briefly while I was on Rare Replay as the prototype. There's a lot changed in that time. And also the embarrassing point where, like, with our change history in Purple, someone will come to you and go like, well, there's a bug in this and your name's on the change list. And I have to point out to them going, but that was 6 years ago.
Like, I don't remember.
So
that bug's been in there for 6 years now.
Often come back.
Yes. You can't escape the change lists. I'm kind of curious because, like, we're also, like, I've been on Walkabout for now 5.5, almost 6 years, I guess. Yeah. How does that sort of change over time, and just sort of like the, I'm kind of curious about the stamina of working on one project for that extended amount of time, and how you sort of like how you freshen things up, how you, you know, as the team changes, so sort of how you deal with basically being on one really, really big project for such a long time.
Yep. So there's probably going to be a couple of cheesy answers here, but the first, like, I've been a Rare for like 2 decades now, and the reason why I've stopped so long is not only because the people there are awesome, I really love the games we make, but they also keep giving me new things to do every couple of years. So like I started as an AI programmer, did some networking, went on to prototyping, like there was a team lead, and eventually escalated to this, where I'm looking after the engineering of Sea of Thieves and the team. So every couple of years, they give me something new. And with the actual game itself, there's, because of the type of updates we do, because of the sandbox natures or the like how we're going to change social play, there is there's a fun and delight about what launch day is going to bring. Like, we think things are going to operate this way. We think players are going to do this way, but what on earth are they going to do? And there's still that joy after all this time of seeing seasons, features, releases go down well and hearing it resonate with the community. And, you know, not everything sticks, you know, it's like no one's perfect in this world. So then it gives you that, you know, puts a bit between your teeth to go like, let's improve it. Let's fix that. What can we do next time around? Yeah, it's just a little loop, but it's a loop I love.
Yeah,
I can sympathize with that, because like every single course brings its new challenges because it's completely new every single time. But it's very similar in a way, but that's what keeps it really fresh. So it's every 7 weeks we're coming out with something new.
Yeah,
I think we've almost even. Oh, thank you. Yeah, like, I think that we've actually got, at least I feel like I've actually gotten almost a little desensitized to the releases because we're releasing every 7 to 8 weeks. And been doing it for so long.